I hope that everybody had a good night's sleep last night and a good breakfast this morning and a fantastic cup of coffee, depending on what side of the world you're on. I know we have some California people here, so it's bright and early there. And then, of course, East Coasters who are getting ready to go into their afternoon. So I thank all of you for coming and joining us this morning. Today I'm joined in the studio by some real estate celebrities who are going to talk about some rather controversial philosophies on running a real estate business. I guess when I declare them to be controversial, I'm just saying that because it kind of sets us up to have some fun. But I tell you, there are a couple of surefire ways to, start an animated discussion among real estate agents. And a discussion of alternative business models is one of them. So I'll encourage you not to get too riled up today. Even if you don't agree with the speaker's ideas or the speaker's philosophies, that doesn't make them wrong. Now, they might be wrong for you, and that's fine, but they might be just exactly what someone else is looking for. Okay. My name is Jennifer Allen, for those of you who don't know me, and I'm the hostess of today's show. If you don't know me, I'm a 13-year real estate agent, and I'm a writer and a speaker and a trainer. I have the rather controversial opinion that real estate agents should be more focused on how well they take care of their current clients rather than how aggressively they pursue their new ones, but that's a soapbox we can cover at another day. I teach real estate agents how to attract business instead of pursue, which gives them the time and energy to take care of the clients they're honored to have, which results in a beautifully vicious cycle of getting even more clients to take great care of. Okay, that's me. Back to our program today. Today's show is designed to be an introduction to the various models that we're going to talk about that are under discussion. Obviously, we can't cover the specifics of each in great detail in a 90-minute show, but I will plan to bring back each guest at a later date, and we can really dig into those specifics, which I think will answer a lot of the questions that will probably be raised today. I do plan to have a part two to this seminar that includes some more alternative business models in addition to what we're talking about today, like exclusive buyer agency, internet-only brokerage. It might be nice to talk to somebody about, you know, a salary-based brokerage. I think that would be interesting. So stay tuned for that. That'll be in the future. The format today is going to go like this. Each of our guests is going to speak for 15 minutes or so, and they'll describe their alternative business model, how it works, the pros and cons, the challenges and such. And then we'll take 5 minutes after each speaker to answer any questions that have come in over the webcast. Then we'll move on to the next speaker. At the end, if there's time, which there may be, we'll get to more questions that have arisen. But if there's not, again, we'll try to compile those and get you answers one way or the other. All right, a little bit of housekeeping we have to take care of before we officially get rolling. Okay, everybody, this is the serious stuff. All right, because we'll be discussing real estate commissions, I need to make the following announcement. Real estate commissions, commission splits, and policies are negotiable, and they're determined by each broker independently. There is no such thing as a standard commission or policy, and any attempt to imply otherwise by a real estate agent is illegal and can get that agent in a lot of trouble. Today's speakers will not be using specific figures, because we in no way want to imply that there is a standard or a norm for our business. If you continue to listen in on this call, you understand that our intent is to discuss various approaches to charging for your services and to help you protect whatever commission you feel you're worth. What you charge and what your policies are is the independent choice of you, and nothing said in this teleconference should be construed as recommended policy or fees. Okay, serious stuff over, but we take this antitrust stuff pretty seriously, so if you get a little confused because we're not throwing specific numbers and figures out there, that's why. We don't want to go to jail. All righty, let's get to it. All right, Nishika, are you ready to go?
I am.
Okay. Nishika okay. Jones, she did was a panelist on a discussion that I did back in May called Realtor Moms. I don't remember what it was, but kind of, you know, how to survive in this business if you're a realtor mom. And she did a great job, and she had some really interesting approaches to the business of selling real estate that actually accommodate somebody who has a life outside of real estate. So I'm going to let Nishika take 15 minutes, tell you a little bit about her and her business model. And she functions mainly now on a referral out model. So, Nishika, you want to tell us about it?
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Thank you.
Hi, everybody. Again, my name is Nishika Jones. I am a 9-year licensed real estate broker and a real estate trainer from Maryland, but I live down. I practice actually a few alternative business models, which include flat fee listings, but today
Nishika,
we're talking about.
Nishika,
uh-huh.
Can you repeat where you are? It buzzed in right as you said where you work and where you live.
Oh, I'm sorry. I work, well, my real estate business is based in the state of Maryland in the Baltimore area,
mm-hmm.
but I actually live down in South Florida, just outside of Fort Lauderdale.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. That's what we didn't get. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. Today I'm going to be talking about the referrals out business model, which is from that move from Maryland to Florida, but I'll just tell you more of the specifics about how I work the referrals going out. I act as a matchmaker between buyers and sellers and agents. I work with a marketing plan that's specific to generating referrals that I'll be able to send out. The plan is not unlike the prospecting you do for any other business that you handle personally as an agent. For me, generating that business includes social media like Facebook, my sphere of influence, networking, and Craigslist. But the niche that I'm best known for is my HUD home expertise, and that generates weekly referrals from a very loyal client base. The client base includes teachers and police officers who are able to purchase HUD homes at a 50% discount. So who doesn't want to tell all their friends and family about that? So there's a great number of referrals that I get just from the niche, if you will. By becoming the go-to person, that recognition generates referrals by itself. When someone is referred to me or I'm contacted by a new lead, I immediately work to establish a relationship, but quickly, because it's important to try and schedule an actual face-to-face meeting as soon as possible between the agent that I'm referring to and the customer. So the amount of time that I spend building a relationship varies, but I do work to establish one. I interact with the buyer or seller to help them find a good match based on their individual needs. Some clients need late-night phone access to an agent, while others may want to communicate by email. And not all agents respond timely to email, and not all agents accept calls after a certain time. So those are just a couple of examples of how I help them set up a match. Of course, if it's a first-time buyer, we're also looking for a specialist in that regard and those things too. Most of the time, I don't speak to the buyer or seller that I've referred out until after closing takes place. But I do ask the agent who's representing them to stay in touch with me so that I know how things are going. Those updates usually come by email. And then I make a follow-up phone call to the buyer or seller after closing to make sure that everything went well and to ask for permission to stay in touch. My referral partners, for the most part, are in one market, the area I moved from. That gives me a working knowledge of some of the local agents' areas of expertise in advance. As I've become more active with social media, though, I am moving into some other markets as well. There are two big challenges when choosing to work a referrals out business model. And by referrals out, just to clarify, I think most people are familiar with referrals that, you know, an agent will refer someone to another agent if they're in a different area or those kind of things. So for me, referrals out meaning I'm not handling referrals as showing properties and going on listing appointments, but I'm sending out referrals. So that's what I mean by referrals out. And the two biggest challenges when working a referrals out business model is, number one is the volume. The only one way to earn a living only working this model means more transactions. And more transactions means more leads means more follow-up, just more of everything. So depending on the market, you know, I'm able to kind of estimate how much business I need to do based on the referral transactions to earn a living, but I think it's really just suited as an income supplement, especially for those getting started. You have to be really organized and have systems in place to be able to work in volume. And although a lot of those things can be automated or handled by an assistant, ultimately it's still, you know, a business model that just it works in volume. So that's the number one challenge. The second challenge is possibly losing the life value of the customer. Typically, when I represent someone personally, we continue a relationship indefinitely. But when you refer someone to another agent, you may have also given any future referral business that would have come from that individual. Fortunately, many of the people that I refer out continue to send me business, but often those referrals go to the agent that I refer them to. The caveat to that, though, is if that person is following up with them. For me, about 30% of the referrals that I send out close, and of those, there were a few more that had gone under contract but didn't close, you know, for various reasons. And I just wanted to add that the best alternative business model, I think, for an agent is one that you truly enjoy and can see yourself doing for a long time. So that's what I had, Jennifer. I don't know if there's something more I can add to it or...
That's really interesting. I'm actually starting, this is Jennifer, I'm starting to do something somewhat similar. And what I found, and we do have a couple questions for you, but we I'm actually more aggressive about pursuing referral business than I was about pursuing business for myself.
I know why.
Do you find that?
Yes, and I know why.
Yeah.
In part because you don't have that same obligation in terms of the transaction with the work and the showings and those kind of things, that it really is a very exciting model to take on in that it does free up. And you talked a little bit about the Realtor Moms call that I was on.
Right.
I have a little one. So for me, the model is really a lifestyle choice that, you know, affords me the opportunity to do some of those other family things instead.
And theoretically, I mean, you may not make as much money as you would taking on the business, but I know last month I made $6,000 by making a couple phone calls, you know, because I had the relationships already built. I referred them out, and that was it. And it's like, you know, hey, I could do this all day. <You know?
Yeah.
laughs> So let's see what our Christine wants to know if you're licensed in Florida or Maryland or both or neither.
I'm licensed in both. The Florida license is actually inactive, but both.
So I guess so. But your business, let me make sure I understand. Your business is in Maryland.
It is.
For the most part. And so you have a license in Maryland. And then, okay. Heather's asking, she just wants to confirm, only 30% close.
Right.
And I think, Heather, what she's saying is that, you know, she sends out referrals and some of them work and some of them don't, just like any other referral, but that she's saying that of the referrals she sends out, about 30 of them result in a paycheck. Is that 30%?
That's correct. And I would add to that, what happens is, even with the best of planning, not all referrals that go out, it's not kind of the same close rate as I could measure for myself. Just because, you know, other agents are taking on the business at that point. So there's a number of factors that go into that number not being, you know, what a normal close rate might be. But for me, that's what the number is, and I'm also working to improve it. So,
you know, and what I'm finding is it, because I'm kind of curious with me is how successful this referral out is going to be. But a big part of it for me is having the right people to refer to. So I can't really, and a question came in, do you refer out all over the nation? And I'm thinking I wouldn't want to. I mean, I don't know people. I don't know. Do you?
It is. It's a very, especially when, like for me, you know, I get a lot of referrals from people who are disappointed if I'm not able to assist them personally.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a real responsibility that I take on in sending them out to another agent. So absolutely, you know, I do have some other network, some other friends, if you will, in real estate in other states and other areas that I am able to refer to, but I don't pursue that kind of business, no. It's really just about staying close to the agents who I do know and trust and I feel most comfortable, but then also building those new relationships as well to be able to send out other referrals.
We've got a lot of questions coming in for you. This is so cool. Rick wants to know, and this was an observation I made listening to you, is, you know, how do you continue to acquire leads? Because as you said, you're going to lose most of your sphere of influence when you refer them out. So you have to, you know, you're continually prospecting, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think we all are, except that my sphere of influence is always going to be my sphere of influence. the newer people that I meet in prospecting, that is the challenge that I mentioned before in terms of, you know, any future business that could come from that. But my sphere of influence doesn't go anywhere.
Okay. Because, I could see that this model would really, you would lose people who would belong to you normally, but
right.
You're going to lose them because, I mean, they don't even, you know, they don't have any use for you, quote unquote, once they've been referred to somebody good. That person's going to get all the future business.
That's true.
So you said earlier you get leads from your sphere, but also Craigslist.
I'm very active on sites like Facebook as far as social media goes. I do a lot on Craigslist as far as the new prospecting. Networking, just kind of the same, you know, techniques you use for businesses you handle personally.
And you have somewhat of a niche that makes it easy to.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Attract people. Do you blog?
Not like I should. No.
Yeah. You probably should. Donna wants to know about the referral percentages, and I don't think we can answer that, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I wish we could, but we cannot answer that. Paula wants to know. Do you have a system for referrals, for referral follow-up? I ask because I've recently had surgery and I only list properties but refer out buyers to those listings. So do you have a pretty complex?
I do. It's not anything fancy, really. It's kind of the same follow-up system that you would use, you know, for your own client list or base. It's the same. It includes touches like email, phone, you know, mail. Same types of follow-up that you would use in any other business. But I wanted to go back to the point about the new business that comes in and not getting future business from them.
Mm-hmm.
One of the follow-up steps that I take each time is after closing, the buyer or seller that I've referred out, I make it a point to connect with them. And when I do so, I do ask for permission to stay in touch.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times there's lots of agents who have handled, you know, the transaction itself who aren't still in touch with that person. They don't follow
up.
So, I mean, you know, getting that permission from the person does afford me an opportunity to put that into the follow-up system too.
Okay. We have a ton of questions, and that's kind of what I expected from today's show, that we would end up with more questions than we could possibly handle. Let me get a couple more of these, and then we'll move on. Does your sphere of influence know that you don't live there anymore? That you don't live in Maryland?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a good point. David says, what are the long-term expectations of this business model? It seems it would decrease instead of increase over time.
I found, and I mean, this isn't something I've done for years. This is probably really about a year and a half old business model for me, and I've actually found growth in it because I think with any other model, depending on how you plan and you work it, you know, it could grow just like if I were, you know, working with buyers and sellers directly and building a base that way. So
it just really
depends on your perspective. It can grow just the same as, you know, other models, but
yeah,
it doesn't have to decrease.
I could see where, you know, you would lose a certain percentage because of X, but you would gain a certain percentage because of Y. And, you know, just like
And I have to add again, too, for me, this particular business model, and that's why I closed it that way, is a lifestyle choice. It isn't, you know, again, with it only being a year and a half old and it being in development, it's a little difficult to project, you know, 5 years out, exactly what the case may be. But
mm-hmm.
I'm always cognizant of it being a business model and following trends and working to improve it. So that, you know, as the years go on, it is something that, as I see it, will always be a supplement, at least, to my income. Maybe not, you know,
right.
Primary earnings.
Well, I see a lot of people starting to turn to that model, and I think it's, in fact, I was talking to somebody the other day about it. Was it Margaret? No, it wasn't. I don't remember who it was. Anyway, about, you know, there are people who are very good at lead generation, and there are people who are very good at actually taking care of the business, and I think it might
right.
be an interesting part, you know, some interesting partnerships.
And I think that's another reason why, that's a good point, why it works so well for me, because I am
mm-hmm.
one of those people where the generating the new business is a strong suit. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, and being true to that, it kind of
mm-hmm.
works.
Right, right. And especially if you're on the computer generating that business, which some people don't have the patience, time, or, you know, capacity to do. And I think there are probably some wonderful partnerships out there in the world for people to combine forces and not have to do everything, you know, be good at everything. So,
right. Mm-hmm.
All right. I think we hit most of the questions. No, they're still coming in, but we're going to go ahead and move on. So I will, for those of you who are still submitting questions for Nishika, they're not going anywhere. I will keep them, and we'll get to them at a later date. So thank you, Nishika. That was really cool. It gives me a lot to think about, too. So, all right. Next up, if we got her back on the line, will be Margaret Rome.
I'm here.
Margaret, thank you. Yay. Margaret's a heavy hitter at Active Rain. She's written a book called Real Estate, The Rome Way. And she, Margaret and I talked a month or two ago about this program, and she actually had all kinds of alternative business models that she said she could talk about, and we kind of tossed some of them out and, you know, like, well, what about this one? What about that one? And so she has all kinds of creative ways to run a business, which I'm very intrigued by. But the one we decided to talk about today, I think you're all going to like, because Margaret works off of a waiting list. And that's not because she's inexpensive. She's actually kind of created, I mean, I'll let her tell you more about it, but she's created sort of an aura around herself that, you know, hey, I'm really good, and I'm worth waiting for. And anyway, I'll let her tell you about it. But Margaret, are you ready?
I am very ready and very excited.
Excellent, you are on, baby.
I'm in. And Nishika, I really enjoyed listening to you, and I think I love your business model. The fact that you're a young mom and are able to create a way to make a living in this business is superb. And thank you for being so good about that. I do it a little differently, obviously. My life's a little different. I've been in the business for almost 20 years. I was with the same company for 18 of those years. And back in 2009, about a year ago, I'm sorry, 2008, I decided to hang my shingle with an attorney, and we started an auction company. But that's not what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about how I have a waiting list, and that waiting list actually started almost in the very beginning when there were people that I really wanted to work with and some people I really didn't want to work with. Maybe they were too far away, or I didn't feel like they were honest enough, whatever. I used to say I have a waiting list, and if you'd like to go on my waiting list, figuring everybody would say, well, forget it, I'll pick another real estate agent. I found that the sellers were so impressed with somebody who was, cocky enough to say, I have a waiting list, and actually turn down a listing, it became very intriguing. So over the years, I've continued to use that. Now, I would say 99% of my business is from referrals. And when somebody asks the big C question, what I will usually say is, I can almost promise you that I'll be the highest person in your neighborhood, and if I'm not, I might have to raise it. And that I am...
that's great.
And you know, you have to be willing to walk away from listings to do that. Now, you know, I of course get the questions, well, why should I pay you more than, you know, agent down the road will do it for 3-5% less. And I'll say, because you get me. And usually, since they've been referred by someone, they know how I work. Those people, if they're not pleased with me, aren't going to refer me to begin with. I've written a few blogs about this, about the I had a couple quite some time ago, who she used to send all her friends to me, and when it was time to sell her house, her husband said, absolutely not. There is no way I'm paying that kind of commission. So they did a FSBO. They did a for sale by owner, and, of course, they got nothing on it. Not of course, but they got nothing on it. Then they took it to an agent who charged much, much less, And about 6 weeks after that listing, they called me and again said, you know, we really want to consider you, but not at your commission. And I said, sorry, we're not going to do this. A few weeks later, they called and the wife said, my husband asked what I wanted for my anniversary. And I said, what I really want for my anniversary is I want to sell my home with Margaret Rome. So with that, I went over, I took the listing. The agent before had not had any showings on the house. He didn't put a sign in the ground, no advertising. Within a matter of a few weeks, I had a full price contract on this property. And, of course, they sing my praises. And whenever they refer someone to me, they always say, whatever her commission is, get her to raise it. You'll even get more for your house. So, you know, that's just the way some of the referrals come to me. As I said, I really am a listing agent. I do very few buyers. In fact, I drive a two-door car and always have. But some of the things, when somebody calls me to ask about the cost of it, I basically say I charge nothing to list a house. And if you think about it, there is no charge to list a house. The sellers are only paying when they go to settlement. Now, there are alternatives to that, and Molly and I have talked about this quite a bit, when you can be a consultant and you get paid ahead of time. But I'm talking now strictly as a listing agent. I only work with people that I like and I respect, and I'm always prepared to walk from a listing. I think in working this way, you really have to have the confidence to stand firm. And I think one of the things that makes me different with the way I treat my sellers is that nobody talks to my sellers other than me. I have it so set up that I make every single listing appointment. Unlike Nishika, who is looking for more and more transactions and more leads, and she needs to have a tremendous amount of transactions to make her numbers, I'm doing it the opposite. I'm trying to do fewer transactions with higher, and I make more on each one, but I'm really picking and choosing who I want to work with. The people who will wait for me do not have a problem with paying what I'm asking. So, you know, I'll open it up for questions, anybody who wants to talk about this.
Let me ask, we do have some questions on the webcast. Let me ask a question, though, that tell me how this waiting list thing works. I mean, do you really have a waiting list, or do people want to sell their house? Tell me a little more about that.
Okay. My maximum that I feel that I can truly handle by, you know, and as I said, I take every one of my own calls. I do not work with an assistant. I'm a solo agent. When I get to 15 listings, that's all I can take. And I have to put you on a waiting list. Right now I have 7 people waiting to list their homes. Now, I was up to 16 listings yesterday, but I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I have 6 under contract right now. So, you know, as they come off a contract, come off of active listings and go under contract, then it opens it up for another listing. And one of the other reasons that I do the 15 is that I also still do, along with all of the blogging and the website and the emails and the texting, et cetera, I still do print advertising. And in that print advertising, I can get about 15 properties in there. And that's one of the things that I guarantee, that when you list with me, your home with a photo, with copy, will be in a newspaper every single week. Now, I know that sounds like that's very expensive, but if you're limiting who you're taking, you know you're going to sell the properties because you also have to get them priced right. You don't take them if they're not priced right. And you don't spend this kind of money on advertising on a listing that you don't think is going to sell.
That's interesting, because later I'm going to talk about the discount model, and I have the same, I mean, the same the same issue as you don't take listings you can't sell. Because let's see, we do have some great questions on here. Holly wants to know, do you recommend doing this business model to a new agent who is too hungry for business to turn it down? Might the model be career suicide? And she says she loves your approach.
I think I would say to you, Holly, if you've got, if you're a new agent who is very confident, who can pick who they want to work with, I feel that if you're turning down business, you're turning it down for a reason. If you're turning it down because it's somebody you don't like or respect, somebody who is not honest with you, and it's very easy to find that honesty. When you're talking to someone on the phone, you pull up their tax records on the properties they're listing, and you ask them a few questions from there. You don't ask any questions that you don't already know the answer. See how honest they are with you. Will they tell you how much they paid for it? Will they tell you who's on title? In other words, you're doing your research. If you find somebody that's not honest, you turn that person down. I do not feel that you are losing business. I think you're taking more qualified people, and I think you can start that from the very beginning. As far as a waiting list, you can say, you know what, I have room for one more listing this week. Whether you have listings or not, you can't copy this model. You've got to have the confidence to be able to carry it off. And you might want to try practicing, you know, one time. If somebody calls and says, you know, I'm ready to list the house, well, duh, if you're a new agent, you're probably going to run over there and list the house. But get all the information you can and make them feel that you're not, they're not, that you're not just taking them because they picked up the phone. Find out how many people they're interviewing. See if you can be last.
Oh my heavens, we have so many questions on
here.
I've got,
yeah. You know, I can take up a whole. Okay, I'm sorry, Holly. Yes, if you have the confidence to pull it off, go for it. And I'll be happy to talk to anybody after this program that has questions, because I know we've got to get to Molly yet too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we've, and me too. But no, and I knew we were going to have more questions than we could get to. But let me ask a few more of you. And question I had as well: do sellers pay you more because you really do more than the competition, or the seller just perceives that you do more?
I think they pay me more because I do more, and they also perceive it, and they also know. I give them pretty much in writing what they're going to clear. I do a net sheet at the time of listing. When I'm listing, I find out their absolute bottom line. Because, see, I can list either way. I can either list at a very, very high commission, or I can list it with a zero commission. And you're wondering, well, how can you do that? Well, if I take it to auction, the seller doesn't pay any commission. So that's the choice I give them. You pay the very high or you pay nothing. Which way would you like to go?
Yeah, we have lots and lots of questions. Heather wants to know what size your market is. I mean, you're in D.C., right, Baltimore?
I'm in Baltimore, Maryland, and it's, you know, it's gigantic.
Right, okay.
I do not limit my listings to an area. Since I'm almost, you know, 99% referrals, they're coming from friends and past clients and lenders and title people. If they've got a home and I think I can help them, I will go out of the area a bit to do that, because, again, I'm the only one making the appointments, and I do the heavy marketing for them.
Okay. Let's see. Emmanuel is asking what they're waiting for, and I think if that wasn't clear, she only takes so many listings at a time, and so the waiting list is for people who want her to list their house, but they that she doesn't have room, so she puts them on a waiting list, and as soon as a property goes under contract, then she can take another listing. Then we did have a good question from Paula. What if they want to sell right away and they need to sell really fast and it's a listing you want? Is this something you make exceptions for or not?
Okay, of course you're going to make an exception
right.
for that. And this is also, if you call me and you're, for instance, Jennifer, if you call me and you said you had your best friend living in Baltimore and they've got to sell and they need a 30-day settlement, et cetera, of course I'm going to jump
mm-hmm.
through hoops to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, somebody on the waiting list, just will have to wait a little bit longer. This is also something you can use when somebody calls and says, well, we're not quite ready.
Mm-hmm.
That's perfect time to say, that's great. Would you like to go on the waiting list now so that when you make that decision, you won't have to wait again?
Excellent. All right, let's go ahead. We do have a lot more questions, and I knew that would happen. And so just look forward to the next Margaret Rome show. But let's go ahead and move on. Thanks, Margaret. I appreciate it, and I'm glad you were able to get back on the line.
My pleasure. I can't wait to hear Molly now.
I know. So we'll bring Molly back in the studio, Molly Wasserman. Molly and I have just connected over. We have connected over the summer, and it's been interesting because I think both of us had heard of each other, but we didn't think that our approaches were compatible until we actually kind of both dug in and went, "Holy moly, we're preaching the same thing from a different angle." So Molly is the founder of the Accredited Consultant of Real Estate Program, otherwise known as ACRE, and you may have seen that around. And it's a program that teaches you how to be a real estate consultant, and she's going to tell us about that. But I absolutely love the idea. I think it's where I hope our industry goes. I don't know if it will, but I think it's the right direction for it to go. And if I can help it get in that direction, I am delighted to do that. So, Molly, are you ready?
I am.
All right, it's all yours.
Thank you. I think the question I get all the time, what exactly is real estate consulting? I think it's helpful to start off by saying what it's not. It's not limited service, although it can include it. It's not flat fees or fee for service, although it can include it. It's not about commissions, although it can include it. Most importantly, real estate consulting is not a gimmick. It's not a title that you throw on your business card because it sounds better. At its heart, when I say real estate consulting, what we're referring to, it's about having the training and tools to provide the consumer some quality, transparent choices, both in the services that they can receive as well as in how those services can be paid for. So real estate consulting, it's about choice. And as such, consulting, when you get trained as a consultant, it opens up a huge emerging market of consumers. And you know that this market, and you know that we're not, as in our traditional model, is able to address it. And this market is consumers who are in need of real estate services and counsel, but they aren't necessarily buying or selling or not looking to do it right now. In other words, as a trained consultant, the real estate professional, you're not limited to transactions in order to earn a living. At the same time, consulting allows you to continue to service buyers and sellers, but because you offer some choices, you can attract far more of them because you have the tools to offer. A true consultant is trained to provide a thorough needs analysis that can help the consumer determine exactly what their needs are, and then as a real estate professional, you are able to offer options in how those needs can be addressed. I feel, and Jennifer knows, and we've been talking about this, I feel that real estate consulting will be the future in real estate, primarily because of two issues that are going on right now. The first one is how the real estate agent's role has changed over the last 30, 40 years, and particularly the tremendous growth of technology. And I'd just like to quickly address both of them. The traditional sales model that we all have worked under, and by the way, I've been in real estate since 1995, so to give you an idea. The traditional sales model has made a lot of sense when our role was strictly that of a salesperson being paid to move the product. However, in the 1990s, our national and state associations, as we all know, they changed our role. It was no longer enough to simply sell homes. We were now asked by NAR, and again, all of our state, local associations, we were now asked to act as fiduciaries. In other words, providing objective counsel that was in the client's best interest. Where we at ACRE believe that the mistake was made was to ask the agent to change their role without examining how we were paid. Most consumers, we believe, have a hard time understanding how we can provide objective counsel, in other words, be fiduciaries, when how much we are paid and whether we're paid at all is wholly dependent on the actions of the consumer that we're advising. So there seems to be, with this role of fiduciary, some confusion amongst consumers. Wait a minute. If you're acting in my interest, then why is your pay contingent upon a sale? The other reason that we believe that consulting will be the future is the tremendous growth of technology. Technology today, I think we all know, has replaced many of the administrative or what I call functionary tasks that have traditionally been in our package of services. Technology has changed our role fundamentally. Today, if you think back even 10 years ago, 20 years ago, our role was essentially one of an information provider. The consumer had to go through a real estate agent to get access to the MLS. We kind of held the key to that. Today, our value is not as an information provider, but rather as an information interpreter. In other words, technology, you can get information until you're blue in the face. In fact, most consumers have information overload. What they need is help in making sense of what it all means. Technology, and this is what I often have said to many, many years, is technology can do functionary tasks better, faster, cheaper than any human being ever could. But what technology can never do is provide objective counsel. It cannot consult, advise, have knowledge of local laws and market conditions, make judgments, own the result. In other words, it cannot consult. So what I'm looking in my crystal ball, Jennifer, is to say, as technology is going to take over many of the functionary tasks, rather than us trying to fight against technology and compete against technology, which you really can't do, it's to fill that desperate need the consumer has to have a partner, a teammate, who can act as a fiduciary and provide just those services that they need, which tend to be around the fiduciary. I mean, I could go on, but
I know.
I've given you a lot.
Well, let's hit some of the high points here before we take some questions. Give us some examples of people who might hire a real estate consultant who are not looking to buy a home or sell a home this week.
Well, I will tell you that on sites such as Zillow or Trulia, it is populated with people who are going there rather than calling a real estate agent specifically because they are not necessarily thinking of buying or selling. These are homeowners, investors. These are people that perhaps are looking to refinance their house or they've outgrown their house and they are looking to either try to make an objective decision based on information such as doing a real objective comparable. Let's say, all right, do I sell my house and buy a bigger house, or do I add to my house? In the traditional model, they don't call the real estate agent. Why? They know that there is no way for that agent to get paid if they, in fact, go the remodel route. And they don't believe, most of them, that that agent is going to give them objective advice when one path they get paid and one path they don't. They tend to wing it themselves, try to get the information themselves, try to be their own real estate consultant. It doesn't work. So a lot of consumers will be very attracted to being able to hire a real estate consultant, pay them by the hour for objective counsel. And what we often encourage our ACRES to do is, and again, this is totally up to them, but they can certainly say to the consumer, look, whatever you're going to be paying me on a consultative basis, you will be paying for it. However, if down the line you are going to be selling or buying a home, I can apply or credit you some of it. And that kind of takes a little bit of the sting out of making this transition. The other people that you tend to get a ton of business from as a consultant, and again, this in no way affects your regular working with buyers and sellers. But I made a huge amount of my income in the last few years before I started Acre, when I was active in the market, working with sellers who had found their own buyer. Now, and these weren't even traditional FSBOs, Jennifer. These were they may not have ever put up a for sale sign. They may have just been talking
to their sister or something.
You know, and they talk to a neighbor, and the neighbor says, "Gee, I'm thinking." You know, when they say, "I'm thinking of selling my house," gee, my daughter wants to move to the neighborhood, and traditionally we cannot address that, and we have such a suspicion between the real estate industry and what we consider people who go off and find their own buyers. The truth of the matter is, going forward, more and more people will find their own buyers, more and more buyers will find their own homes. That's where we're needed the most, and that's where a consultant fits in very, very well.
I did a lot of that in my career, too, and I was always surprised when agents would insist on charging, you know, a full commission, whatever their full commission was, to manage that process. And I thought, and, you know, shoot, I can do that.
When there's no marketing involved, exactly.
Right.
The other thing I might add, and I just quickly, and this will help to, I think, put the pieces in place about what this model has developed from. I used, when I developed this model, I used as a great example the financial planning industry and how it evolved in the 1980s. Some of you who might remember, in the early 1980s, people that called themselves financial planners were, in fact, salespeople or stockbrokers. And you'll see the parallels with our industry today, they would call themselves financial planners because it sounded better than saying they were financial salespeople. But in fact, that's what they were, because what they were doing is offering free consultations, but they were paid to sell their product. As the 80s wore on, consumers were demanding a choice. They said, look, I don't believe you can really give me objective advice when you're only paid if you sell your products. I want somebody who can, I'll pay them by the hour, but I want to be assured of getting objective counsel. And from that consumer demand came the CFP designation, the Certified Financial Planner. Now, the CFP has grown tremendously in the last few decades, but that growth doesn't mean that there's no longer financial salespeople. There are. We all know them. However, there's a clear line of demarcation between a financial salesperson who's paid when they sell products and a true CFP who is paid to provide objective counsel. So when I developed the real estate consulting model, I looked to that very much so. In the same way, you know, we in our industry will often call ourselves consultants. When I say consulting, I mean somebody who's trained and has the tools to provide true choices. The only difference I would say between what happened with the CFP and what we've developed is that we are very realistic. People have been paying by commission only for many, many years. So there's going to be a transition where to a point where we won't be, we'll be totally paid non-contingently. So I think it helps to look at say other industries have evolved as their consumer demand has evolved.
One thing I think is fascinating about this conversation and is, you know, the risk of the contingency-based structure. Those of you who have heard me talk about how I charge, you know that I have an option, and if you go to my website, you can read all about it, but I have an option where you can either pay my full fee, which I disclose, here it is, or you can pay me a certain amount up front, which offsets my risk, and therefore my commission percentage is lower. And that's kind of, I mean, somewhat what you're talking about, it could be something that's
absolutely, it all fits right in. But I think, and I say this in my book, Ripping the Roof Off Real Estate, and I'm still very, very passionately about this.
Mm-hmm.
The mistake we have made as an industry is that we try to talk about commissions as payment for services. The fact is that we're trained this way, especially when we go to our brokers and say, "Gee, I'm getting pushback from consumers about how much I charge," and the brokers invariably always say, "Well, just tell them all the stuff you do for them." And I will agree that most consumers have absolutely no idea how much we do for them, but they're missing the point. Commissions have never been about services provided. If they were, then we would get paid for a $300,000 house or a $600,000 house. commissions are about risk mitigation, and we have been afraid to say to the consumer very openly, and that's why I use the word transparent a lot, that we have to be open enough to say to the consumer, look, it's basic economics 101. High risk has to be high reward. That's why actually Margaret and I connected so well when she was talking about charging. She should charge high. It's not just the quality services, but the fact that traditionally we are carrying all of the risk. You don't, and I say this all the time, you know, your accountant is not paid just if Uncle Sam is nice to you. They are not paid on an outcome. If you want the real estate professional to carry all the risk, they have to get paid a high reward. That's what it's all about. Now, if you'd rather pay just for the services, we provide options where you can pay for the services. But I think we need to be very open with the consumer. And like Margaret, I believe, and she's singing my song, and we've talked about this a lot, is that as a consultant, I don't believe that everybody should work with everybody. The point is that one of the things when I talk about choice, it's not just the consumer has a choice, but the real estate consultant should have the choice to say, you know what, sorry, this is not going to be a good match. You need to work
Or to be able to say, I can't help you. I'm not going to take your money because this is not a situation I can help you with.
Absolutely. And if you're presented with a consumer who wants to do something that you're not comfortable with, and there are certain things that are done in our industry that I personally would not put my name to,
mm-hmm.
and it's not a judgment, it's simply what I'm comfortable with, I have the choices also mine to say, this is not going to be a good match. Again, supremely confident, you bet, to be able to say, look, this is what I do. And I always call it my Nordstrom Walmart speech about mm-hmm. the fact that, you know, there's Nordstrom, there's Walmart. I only do Nordstrom. I will give you a lot of ways to pay for Nordstrom. But in terms of the quality of what I provide, I only do Nordstrom. Now, if you want Walmart, you're in luck because there's lots of Walmart agents. But that's not what I do. Not a judgment. It's simply a statement of saying, this is how I work. And hopefully we can, you know, I can assist you. If not, I'll be happy to refer you or point you in a different direction.
Let's see. We do have lots of questions here, and I definitely think we're going to have to come on later and do a bigger show. But basically, Christine's asking, and we have some variations of this question on here, is how do you get paid as a consultant? How do you get paid?
The answer to that is a variety of ways. And, again, that's the whole point of consulting is that we offer choices. In other words, one of the basics of real estate consulting is doing a very thorough needs analysis. We actually, in the ACRE program, we have that tool in our resource library, both for buyers and for sellers, as well as for investors or homeowners. And by doing a thorough needs analysis, you're helping the consumer to identify where their true needs are. And then you can get paid in a variety of ways. You can offer an hourly rate. You can offer a flat fee for a package of services. You can also, if they're more comfortable, you can also offer commissions. But again, the whole point is there's no judgment involved with this. It's simply saying what are their needs, and certain ways of being paid make sense for certain people's situation and, frankly, their comfort level. My mother, I always say this, is very risk averse. She would never sell her house doing anything other than paying by commission. But she also, because she's been educated by her daughter, understands that she's ultimately going to pay more when she pays by commission because she's not carrying any risk, the real estate agent is. So the answer, Christine, is basically there's a variety, and that's what consulting is about. It's offering, being able to be trained to offer real choices. I often say to ACRES, look, if you are offering choices but you're hoping with your fingers crossed that they'll choose commissions, then you haven't set up your fees right. Your fees should be set up so that you are paid very, very well for the time that you put in.
And that's a question, of course, that's come up that we can't answer is, well, what do you charge?
No way, Jose.
I am curious, I actually just did the ACRE program, and Lois had asked, how do you get training to be a consultant? Molly has an entire program that at the end of it you get the ACRE designation, and I just recently did it. And that was a question I was kind of curious about is there anywhere that you talk about that, Molly, or is it just simply, no, you're going to have to, you know, you really
need to. No, we provide a workbook.
Mm-hmm.
in the future, we're actually going to be we're in the middle of redoing our course book, and we will be raising the bar to become an acre in the future, where you will actually, right now you just do the content, then you become an acre, then with the acre program you get a year of coaching where we hope you've developed those rates and things, but we're going to be changing that so that you will have to demonstrate that you've developed your rates, your fees, your hourly prior to getting your acre designation. But we do provide the training and the tools to help you develop it. The answer to a lot of people's questions, what do you charge, is like, even if it wasn't against antitrust, I've honestly said to acres and people who want to be acres, look, you know, it's like taking somebody else's prescription medicine. It won't work for you. It's very individual. It's up to your market. So we do provide you the tools, but it really ultimately comes down to, what do you want to earn? How do you want to set it up? How do you want to work? I did a lot of my packages just doing negotiating and troubleshooting of transactions, because that's what sellers need, what needed when they had found their own buyer. But it's so individual. The cool thing about consulting is that you, and we get this all the time, well, aren't you going to lose business? No, you're gaining business, because there's nothing to take away from your traditional business. And but I will tell people, look, approach every consumer, every buyer, seller that you work with, even if they've done 10 million transactions with you before, don't go into it assuming that they're going to do it the same way. Do a consulting presentation and offer them choices. Now, they may ultimately choose, as many do, in fact, most do, to go with a commission route, and that's great, but they're choosing it because it's the best option, not because it's the only one.
Excellent. Well, we have too many questions to get to, and Paula made the suggestion, you know, if you want more information, you know, obviously Molly does have a website and a newsletter that you can sign up for, and she's very active on that. What's the website on that, Molly?
It's theconsultingtimes.com.
Theconsultingtimes.com.
Make sure you put the Z there. It's theconsultingtimes.com. Which is it's a very big platform. It's got a blog for the consumer, blog for the professional. It's got the acre locator, where you can locate every acre gets put on the map and where consumers can find them. And there's also another blog, which is members only, which is our acre graduates who have access to our private listserv. We call it the coaching exchange.
And I will, when I send out the summary and the recording of this, I will include links to all of this information. So
and, also,
and definitely, yeah, go ahead.
Very importantly, on the when you go to the Consulting Times, you will see a place to sign up for our free newsletter. It is a monthly newsletter for real estate professionals only, called the Acre Alert.
Yeah, and it's good. For those of you who know me, Jennifer, this really fits in with so much of what we talk about, and it's competence-based, and that, you know, not everybody can be a real estate consultant no matter what they have on their business card. And I think Molly said she thinks, you know, maybe 1% would actually be qualified to be a real estate consultant. I think probably a bigger number of my people would be qualified to,
oh, absolutely,
to do so, because it's competence-based, it's empathy-based, it's, you know, it's not just, it's not a salesperson. I'm, you know, we could get off on that soapbox, but we aren't going to. So, anyway, let's go ahead and, Molly, thank you. And we're definitely going to have to bring you back, because there's so much more. Molly and I, have that we've spent 4 or 5 hours on the phone talking about this stuff. So, definitely there's more to learn. There are lots of issues as, you know, well, how do you work it with your broker? You know, how do you market the services? There's just a gazillion topics that we could talk about, and we would love to do that. So, all right. So let's move on to my topic of discussion, which is exactly kind of, well, not exactly, but the opposite of what Margaret was talking about, and somewhat the opposite of what Molly thought that my opinion was on this topic. Anyway, I am going to talk about the discount brokerage model, the big bad D word. Like I said earlier, if you want to start up a ruckus among real estate agents, this is a great place to start. One of my very earliest blogs that I posted on ActiveRain was about the discount brokerage model, because I used to run one. I don't anymore, but it was about I wrote a blog about kind of how it works and why I liked it. And I tell you, I was stunned at how the floodgates opened viciously. I mean, I think that blog got 150, 170 comments, and a lot of them were kind of mean. I was really surprised. And I was fairly new to Active Rain at the time, so, you know, talk about a way to make a splash. It was actually taken down, so if you go back looking for it, you won't find it. They took it down because someone decided it was an antitrust issue. But it was a good one. Anyway, one of the guys on there, one of the comments I got, and I wanted to read this to you, was, okay, this is what this guy said. You are a discount broker because you are a pathetically weak salesman. That's why you have to give a discount in order to get a deal. Some of us, not you, are good salespeople who are able to command a price. You just roll over and say, okay, I'm weak and not worth a lot, so I will do things for you cheaper than a real broker. Do the world a favor, get out of the business, and let the real people work. Okay, that's just a sample of some of the comments I got to my blog about being a discount broker. Now, hopefully, several people came back and told him to, you know, to go stick a sock in it. But a lot of the people that commented on that blog were somewhat of a similar mindset. So as I'm speaking today, please keep an open mind and see what you think. Now, there are, of course, dozens of ways to run a business based on a philosophy of charging less than one's competition. I certainly can't cover them all, and I don't know the details and the ins and outs of all of them. So I'm going to tell you how I did it, and I think that some of you may find it sounds like an appealing way to do business. If it doesn't sound like an appealing way to do business, you're welcome to completely discount it. I'm not telling you that this is how it ought to be done, but this is a business model that works very well for some people. I actually do not – I used to own a discount brokerage company. That's where my experience came from, and I don't own it anymore, and I don't work under that model anymore. I now work under a more traditional business model. So, you know, if you – listen to what I'm saying and you're going, well, that would never work for me, then that's just fine. It actually, I decided at the end of the day that it was not something that was working for me either, but that doesn't mean there was anything really wrong with it. I really was proud of my discount company because I was able to provide good service, and believe it or not, I was every bit as profitable under that model as I have been under a traditional model. Now, first things first, I was not a limited service broker. I was a full-time, full-service, fully committed real estate agent. My clients got my full attention, and they got a full array of services. I did almost everything a quote-unquote full-price real estate agent promised. In fact, in the vast majority of cases, I actually delivered more than the other agents actually delivered, although they often promised a little bit more than I did. I did virtual tours. I did open houses. I did home brochures. I did internet advertising, but what I didn't do was implement the marketing techniques that I felt just primarily marketed myself. I didn't do newspaper ads. I didn't do magazine ads. I didn't do just listed and just sold. I didn't do anything like that because I felt it was more important to spend my limited marketing funds on marketing that would actually sell the house, and I just passed on was primarily fluff. In my opinion and in my market, that I felt was mostly fluff. Now, I was wide open about my fee. I charged everyone the same amount, and I included that percentage in my advertising, which, as you can imagine, didn't go over too well with the other companies in the area, and I'll get back to that in a sec. Now, why would a full-service agent choose to, quote-unquote, discount their services? Now, I can only speak for myself. But here's why I did it. There were actually a couple of reasons I did it. Now, you can call me a wuss if you want, but at the time, I was looking for any way to avoid discussing commissions with a seller prospect. I didn't like the conversation. I felt it took away from the rapport that I needed to build with this person. And so essentially, I was just looking for a way to completely get it out of the conversation, and that worked. Now, partly because my commission was so low, there really wasn't anything to talk about. And two, because I used the fee in my advertising, it wasn't a secret. I mean, everybody knew what I was going to charge, and again, there was really nothing to talk about. I'll admit that in the beginning, I was hoping to create a volume business for myself because with the lower fee, I thought it would build on itself and attract buyer clients. because we didn't discount or rebate our buyer agent co-op. So in a way, in the beginning, we thought, well, you know, maybe our low commissions would be somewhat of a loss leader to attract buyers and get the full buyer co-op. But as it turned out, the listing side of our business was very profitable, even though we charged, you know, in some cases less than half of what, you know, some of the other brokers in my neighborhood were charging. At the end of the year, from my first, and I did this for 2 years, at the end of both years, our net was just as much as it had been during our traditional days. Now, why? How can that be? Well, it was really interesting. It was the first time I'd ever owned my own company, and so I really became accountable to myself and to my expenditures. I was stunned after my first year as a discounter to see how much more responsible I was with my money and how frivolous I'd been in years past. Also, because it was my company, obviously I didn't have a split or a desk fee. And frankly, I believe that's the key to making a discount model work. When you don't charge a lot of money to sell a house, there's really only so many pieces of the pie you can share with others before it starts to be a pretty darn small piece of pie. A girlfriend of mine worked for Assist to Sell, and she ran into that. By the time her lower fee was split with her company, she really didn't have much to show for it at the end of the day. And that's when I realized if you're going to run a discount model, it's probably better if you do it under your own name as opposed to with a company that you're going to have to pay a split to. Now, another reason that I found myself profitable was because I was pretty fussy about the listings I would take. It was kind of an interesting paradigm shift because the potential payday wasn't really all that exciting if the house sold. I wasn't as tempted to take listings that I'd have to get lucky to sell. So, like, if you've got a $700,000 listing or, let's say, a $300,000 listing, a smaller percentage listing fee is not all that much money. It's not as much money as a bigger percentage listing would be. And you say, you know, do I really want the hassle for this house I can't sell? No, the payday is not really worth it. It kind of forces you to be a little more picky about the listings that you take. We just really didn't have the margins to spend money and time on houses that we didn't think could sell, and it was very easy to turn those down. As I recall, during my time as a discounter, all but one or two of my listings did sell during that period, although, of course, it was a different market. There are challenges, of course, to discounting, and there are reasons that I stopped doing it. First, and probably foremost, the majority of my business had always come from my sphere of influence, and they would have paid a higher fee without question. So in a way, I was kind of throwing away a paycheck for no good reason. But the stranger business that I attracted, which we got some, but the business we got because we were cheap was really difficult business, and it didn't fit in my business model of providing exceptional service. The sellers, you know, the sellers that were attracted to us because we were cheap themselves. They weren't interested in staging. They weren't interested in making repairs. They weren't reasonable at inspection. You know, these are the kind of people who say, you know, well, it was that way when I bought it. You know, I'm not going to replace it when, you know, okay, so they bought a house with a 100-year-old furnace, and the seller buyer wants them to replace it, and they, you know, they weren't going to. I was used to working with people who appreciated my advice and respected it, and for the most part, these price-sensitive strangers didn't, and that was hard for me. It was hard to get referred listings. If you're looking to refer somebody, my, you know, percentage referral fee was going to be less than what that person could have got if they referred it to a different listing agent. There was a fair amount of hostility from other agents, which surprised me, I guess. I figured surely they have something better to do than worry about me. But I heard that there was actually a meeting at one of the local real estate offices specifically called to figure out how to shut me down. Now, that's flattering, I got to tell you. But I was told by some sellers that I interviewed with that the other agents were saying, well, if Jennifer Allen lists your house, we won't show it. And which is illegal and completely inappropriate, but, you know, that was kind of tough to deal with. Now, overall, though, I really did enjoy my time as a discounter, and I would do it again if it felt like the right thing to do. There were a lot of lessons that I learned. One of them, and Margaret alluded to this, is that when you run a volume business and you charge less than you have to, you're basically working twice as hard for the same amount of money. I mean, what if you raised your fees and lost half your clients? You'd be working half as hard for the same amount of money. And when that occurred to me, I went, wow, okay, this may not be the best business model. But I do think there are situations where a discount business model is good. It can be profitable. And it really was kind of fun to have a unique message to go out there with. And, again, I did enjoy my time as a discounter. So let me see. All right. Let's go ahead, and if you have any questions for me, go ahead and shoot them in on the webcast, or questions for anybody else. Please keep them coming in, and I'll compile them all, and we'll be able to answer them one way or another. I want to thank everybody. Thank my speakers so much. We're going to finish up right on time here. I appreciate everything, and definitely there's so many questions that I'm going to save those, and we'll come back to them, I promise, and we'll get those answered one way or another. So thank you all for joining us today, and thanks, everybody, for being here. I very much enjoyed your questions and your comments, and I thank the speakers, and I guess we can all go enjoy our Saturdays. So thank you all very much, and look forward to hearing from you on entering the contest. Thanks.